From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you from Cleveland and the Republican National Convention. It's the last night for us here in Cleveland as the curtain readies to close on the GOP convention. Mercifully so, maybe, after attempts at party unity failed in a fairly stunning fashion. Tonight's theme is Make America One Again. This is the night when the nominee will address the hall and the country. And in this most unconventional convention, it will be up to Donald Trump to make the case, after some others refused to do so on his behalf, that he should be the next president of the United States. This hour On Point from Cleveland, Donald Trump takes center stage. You can join us on air or online. Well, this conversation is always on. What have you learned from the Republicans' week in Cleveland? And what will you be listening for tonight from Donald Trump? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And welcome again to those watching us tonight on Facebook Live. This week, we've been live streaming, and we're doing it right now. They're on Facebook at On Point Radio. Got a great lineup for you tonight in Cleveland. With me right now is Dr. Michael Burgess, Republican congressman representing Texas 26th District, Northern Dallas, Fort Worth area. He was a Cruz supporter. He is now on the Trump bandwagon. Congressman Burgess, welcome. It's good to see you.
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you. Okay. Seems like this is something we do every 4 years.
Every 4 years or so, yes, like clockwork. But this has been a kind of an unusual year. Your guy did not win the nomination. On stage last night, he was not happy about it. That was pretty clear. A whole lot of Trump supporters in the audience were not happy that he withheld that endorsement. This morning, he met with Texans, and he got heckling right there from your own state. Don't mess with Texas, but people were messing with Ted Cruz today. How big a problem is the Cruz unendorsement for Mr. Trump tonight, for Mr. Trump in this week of the convention?
Well, first, let me just clarify one point. I wouldn't call it a non-endorsement. Senator Cruz said, devote your conscience. To tell you the truth, I'm going to take his advice. My conscience tells me, vote for Donald Trump. I hope others join me in that.
How can you, who were a true blue Cruz man, turn around and vote for Donald Trump? You know, he's called Donald Trump a pathological liar and, right on down the line. If Ted Cruz is right, how can Donald Trump be right?
Look, you know what the stakes are in this election from the standpoint of a conservative. People have been talking about it for months. I don't know that there was anything really new revealed last night other than the fact that the feelings that were hurt during the primary are still pretty close to the surface and pretty raw. But on balance, look, we lost Justice Scalia on Valentine's Day this year. That Supreme Court seat is unfilled. Yep. There are likely to be other Supreme Court seats that will need to be filled in the next 4 years. That is a critical assignment that I think Donald Trump needs to take on, not Hillary Clinton. The other thing is the heads of federal agencies, and I deal with that all the time in the Energy and Commerce Committee.
Yeah.
The heads of federal agencies are all appointed by the president. It is critical that there not be another Democratic administration to layer on to the last 8 years.
Ted Cruz, still angry this morning, still talking in an angry way. He had pledged, of course, along with others, to support whoever the nominee was. In the end, he didn't do that. He said he couldn't because Donald Trump had insulted his wife, had said his father was involved in the JFK assassination. Here he was this morning.
That pledge was not a blanket commitment that if you go and slander and attack Heidi, that I'm going to nonetheless come like a servile puppy dog and say thank you very much for maligning my wife and maligning my father.
He won't be coming like a servile puppy dog. Now, I'm not saying you're coming that way, but are there Cruz supporters?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there Cruz supporters who are just not going to turn around, who are going to stick with Ted Cruz? He's not turning around, at least not explicitly.
Well, again, the time from the Indiana primary to today apparently has not been long enough to heal some of those raw feelings. I had hoped that it would be, but it was not. Look, I've got all the respect and affection for Senator Cruz. He's been great for our state. He's been a great partner in Washington. But we're past the primary. Donald Trump won the election. He won it fair and square. He did it the old-fashioned way. He outworked his opponents. And there were 16 opponents on the stage with him that he outworked. I have come to know him and the campaign in the weeks since the Indiana primary. Look, Donald Trump, after the Indiana primary, they reached out to me and said, What are your ideas on health care? Tom, I have never had a presidential candidate ever do that. Not George Bush, not Newt Gingrich, not Ted Cruz. Donald Trump was interested in what I thought about health care going forward. to me, that says a lot. You know, in his book, The Art of the Deal, he says, I have a knack for getting the best people around me and bringing out the best in them. I trust him in that, and I think that's exactly what he's going to do.
You're a serious man. You're a conservative. Are you comfortable having Donald Trump in the White House? You may get your Supreme Court picks. You may get your agency heads. But are you comfortable with all the decisions he's going to have to make that he'll do it in a conservative and responsible way?
Look, he's going to have Mike Pence at his side. He is going to interact with a Republican House of Representatives, and I trust a Republican Senate. I think all of those things taken together actually will work out very well. But again, back to the agency heads, why have we never fixed the problems at the VA? And I'm going back to the George Bush administration. Why is it still a problem? No one has made it a priority. Donald Trump can make it a priority, and I believe that he will.
Congressman Burgess, Dr. Michael Burgess, the 26th District of Texas, thanks very much for stopping by tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Here at the Republican Convention. Good night. Donald Trump, well, he's hoping he'll have a good night. It's a big speech night for Donald Trump. We don't know what he'll say exactly. I guess maybe we do. The text is starting to come out as we speak right here. But we know how he has stepped up in the past and talked a lot about winning. Here he was in Albany in March, Donald Trump.
We're going to start winning again. We're going to win so much. We're going to win at every level. We're going to win economically. We're going to win with the economy. We're going to win with military. We're going to win with health care and for our veterans. We're going to win with every single facet. We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning. And you'll say, please, please, it's too much winning. We can't take it anymore.
We can't take it anymore. All this winning. We'll see how much winning gets in there tonight. We'll see if Donald Trump follows the teleprompter. We've got a text in front of us now. My guest kind of perusing it. Soon enough, the speech will be out there for everyone to hear. With me here at the convention in Cleveland now, we've got Ginger Gibson, political reporter for Reuters. He's been reporting on the Trump campaign from the beginning. Tonight, he accepts the Republican nomination. Ginger Gibson, it's great to have you here.
Great to be here.
Byron York is here, chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner and a Fox News contributor. On the day that Fox chief Roger Ailes is out after those sexual harassment charges, Byron, it's good to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dana Milbank is here, columnist for the Washington Post, who ate his own words, and I mean literally, after writing that Trump would never be the Republican nominee. Tonight, he accepts the nomination. Dana, it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining
us. Pleasure to be with you, Tom.
Byron York, let me come first to you. What do you make of this week? What has it said about the party and Donald Trump's chances of winning in November?
Well, it's been a ragged convention. There's just no doubt about it. The first night was kind of marred with the whole Melania Trump incident. The second night went pretty well. Last night was genuinely stunning. I mean, there are not many events at conventions that stun you, and as I watched the Ted Cruz speech, I was pretty darn amazed by what was happening. So it has been chaotic. But I think what you have tonight is Donald Trump has this opportunity. He's got the spotlight on him. There are tens of millions of people watching. And Trump has, over the course of this campaign, really blown up Republican orthodoxy in some really important areas.
Yep.
Trade, immigration, entitlements, foreign entanglements. He has an opportunity to present himself almost as a different type of politician, certainly not a doctrinaire Republican. This is his opportunity to appeal to people who maybe you're turned off by Republicans. We'll see what he does.
You're a conservative writer, a conservative publication. Do you want him to win?
Do I want him to win?
Well, you know, we've had conservatives sit here with us and say,
yeah.
He must not.
I understand. And a lot of the conservative intellectual publications have become taken a basically never Trump standpoint. Personally, I've decided to just report on this campaign. Mm-hmm. I think you look mm-hmm. at it down the line.
Yep.
And I have just completely stayed out of that. So I'm definitely not never Trump, but I'm not never anything. So I'm just staying out of taking a position on that.
Ginger, you're looking a little bit at the text already. He's going to say to Americans, I am your voice. He's going to say that repeatedly tonight as he goes down the sort of litany of dark problems facing the country, as he will describe them, and the bright future that he says he would like to bring.
He is. I scanned through this pretty quickly. I should say that I have not independently verified that this is a leaked copy, but it's been reported by a number of places that it is. The first thing that jumped out at me was something Byron pointed out already, which Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo. I mean, this is a really strong statement to say, and he goes on to say at length, I will not sign trade deals with multiple countries that are multiple pages long. I will not sign the TPP. NAFTA was the worst deal ever made. Those are pretty strong statements coming from now nominee of a party that cheered all of those things. That's a massive shift. We are going to hear him talk about himself. He gets into his children, his father, the role that his father played in teaching him about business. That was one thing they said they wanted to hear a lot of, was the personal side of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're going to get a Donald Trump stump speech today. I think we're going to get a pretty classic textbook political address. A lot of time spent comparing and contrasting himself to Hillary Clinton.
Dana Milbank, here he is. This is his night. You said he would never be the nominee, and now he is. Can he come out? Can he be turning things upside down all over in the conservative realm and really in our overall American policy? Americanism, not globalism, that is a brand new theme for this country. It hasn't been around in a long time and maybe never exactly in the White House. I mean, others have run on it in history, but never won on it in history. Are you prepared to sit here tonight and say, you miscalled the nomination a little bit, can he win?
Well, I'm not going to gamble any particular food on this situation.
No more eating newsprint.
But what I can say is it's very clear from what he's going to say tonight that this is not a pivot. He's doubling down on everything he has done throughout the campaign. This is indeed the speech. The Republican National Committee released it on embargo. Then a couple of news organizations broke it. I know after that the Washington Post decided we'd put it out there as well.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
So this is indeed the speech, and it's striking. It is perhaps the darkest speech by a major political candidate that we've ever seen.
Darker than
in
Nixon. We remember some pretty dark ones.
Darker
from
than Nixon. And this is what's interesting to me. I was actually reading through Nixon's 1968 speech, and he used the same law and order line that Trump has now appropriated. And he said, you know, some people may see this as racist. Let me explain to you why it's not. Mm-hmm. There's no qualification in here from Donald Trump. It is doubling down on what he's done so far. And he said, look, you know, basically what this is saying, I'm going after the disaffected, angry, older, white guy of low means, less education. I want to turn them out in extraordinary numbers. He's not reaching out across the aisle at all with this speech.
Dana Milbank with the Washington Post. Please stand by. We have to take a short break right here. Ginger Gibson with Reuters and Byron York with the Washington Examiner. It's great to have you all right here. This is it. Trump's big night at the Republican National Convention. Listeners, you can join us. Are you still studying Donald Trump, trying to figure him out? What do you think? We'll finally hear tonight from the teleprompter, or maybe off. Does Trump speak to you? And with what message at the end of this week of Republican conventioneering? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and this is it, Trump's big night at the Republican National Convention. We're looking at what we've learned in this tumultuous week in Cleveland and what Donald Trump hopes to do tonight, Trump's message to the party and to the country. Dana Milbank is with us, columnist for The Washington Post. He said Donald Trump would never be the nominee. Well, yes, he is, and tonight he accepts that nomination. Ginger Gibson is here, political reporter for Reuters, been covering the Trump campaign from the very beginning. And we've got Byron York with us, political correspondent for the Washington Examiner. You can join us as well tonight. Are you still studying this guy? Are you trying to figure him out? Have you got him figured out? Is he your man? Do you see Donald Trump as a savior, a danger, the next president? And if Ted Cruz won't endorse him and none of the former Republican presidents or recent candidates show up, is that a problem for you or a sign that Trump would change some things in a way that maybe you want to see? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Donald Trump will be introduced tonight by his daughter Ivanka. Lots of family on that stage all this week. She'll explain how she sees her father. She was talking this morning with Ainsley Earhart on Fox and Friends. Here, explaining how she sees her father.
The Donald Trump I know is both incredibly capable and driven and strong, but also tremendously warm and caring and loyal and empathetic. So it's really both sides of his personality that I think have made him such a great parent, such an effective businessman, and ultimately will make him such a great president.
A taste of what we will no doubt hear from the podium tonight. Way back in June, a year ago, when he declared his presidency, Donald Trump described what he thought America needed.
We need a truly great leader now. We need a leader that wrote the art of the deal. We need a leader that can bring back our jobs, can bring back our manufacturing, can bring back our military, can take care of our vets.
And those are the promises that he's made all year long. Those and more. Dana, everybody's been in Cleveland this week. I mean, the press is all here. It's mob scene everywhere you go. Cameras everywhere, microphones everywhere. How much, and the drama inside the hall and the drama with Ted Cruz, how much does that matter when, I mean, the speech tonight will matter. A lot of people watching, I saw somewhere an estimate of maybe 10 million. But how much does the convention matter, the convention drama matter in terms of Donald Trump's run for the White House itself?
Well, certainly it matters. And depending on what Donald Trump does tonight, that will erase whatever we've seen over the last 3 days. I mean, it has been something of a debacle so far in terms of the Ted Cruz moment, the plagiarism moment, the rebellion on the floor. All of these were avoidable had it been a little better organized, which it wasn't. But if Donald Trump delivers this speech powerfully tonight, I imagine it will be received raucously in the House. That will be the takeaway from this convention. Now, will that appeal to people who aren't already with Trump and aren't in the hall tonight? I kind of doubt that it will. I don't think that's what he's trying to do. I mean, he is making a play, as Mike Pence did last night, to blue-collar Democrats to expand the base a little. But he's not trying to reach out to the moderates here. He's not making any sort of a pivot to widen his base. He believes he can win this election with his base. And as somebody who's doubted before, I'm not going to tell you that he can't do it, but it's extremely unorthodox.
He's going to have Peter Thiel out there tonight, the big venture capitalist, co-founder of PayPal, who I'm hearing is going to stand on the stage and say, he's a big money guy. He's got his own way of thinking about things, unorthodox in his own way, like Donald Trump. He's going to stand on the stage and say, I'm proudly gay. So it's not all just an appeal to that kind of red meat base. He's going to have Jerry Falwell Jr., president of Liberty University, out there. Another play for the Christian conservative base, I guess. Reince Priebus, of course, RNC chairman, will be there. Ginger, when you look at Trump, do you think, I mean, you've followed his campaign and their thinking for a long time now, do they really think they can do it with that white, aggrieved voter? Do they feel an urgent need to reach out beyond that, or an urgent need to dig as deeply as possible into that voting vein?
I think their primary drive is digging into that base, finding those people that they think naturally come to him. You mentioned white, middle-class, blue-collar workers. That's another natural appeal. I do think that sometimes we hear from them that they could win minorities over. I don't know what it's entirely based on. We are going to hear a nod from Donald Trump in that speech towards LGBT people. It was a fight on the platform committee to even acknowledge that LGBT people were targeted in Orlando. The platform committee refused to put the letters LGBT in there in that sentence. Donald Trump, in talking about Orlando, was going to say LGBT. You know, it's one of those great, like, nobody believes the things he said. Nobody believes what he thinks on gay marriage. Nobody believes what he says on abortion. They think he's actually quite moderate on those positions. And I think we're going to see maybe a nod to that now and in the future. But I think Dana's right. This is a speech that's going to appeal to his base. This is really pushing on the things he's been talking about and hoping that that's what is going to resonate with people to get him to show up.
The kind of urgency on the floor after the Ted Cruz thing last night. Here was a former Cruz supporter now supporting Trump on the convention hall, criticized Cruz for failing to endorse Trump, said the Republican Party has to come together.
We are not all behind him on not supporting Trump. It's a movement. The media would have you think it's Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, Hillary. It isn't. It's a movement. We have to get together. We need that office.
We need that office. That's the one thing everybody here agrees on. But Byron York, beyond that, I mean, what is agreed on here? How would you describe what Donald Trump stands for? It has been in the past an article of faith that for a long time now that the Republican candidate for the presidency would be pretty darn conservative. Yeah. If he, as you say, has blown up conservative orthodoxy, what does he stand for?
Well, that's why I was going to add. I think he does think, rightly or wrongly, that he can win attract voters beyond the Republican base. I mean, mm-hmm. he talks about winning California, for goodness sakes. He talks about winning New York. He talks about winning states that he doesn't have any chance to win, but he believes that he can appeal beyond the Republican base.
I think he's going to explicitly ask for Sanders supporters to come to his
exactly.
side.
Exactly. He had his big problem coming in was that he had not consolidated Republican support. If you look, I think the most recent Washington Post poll had 77% of Republicans saying they would vote for him. Hillary Clinton was in the 90 to 92% range
Dems.
Of Dems.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously Trump had work to do with Republicans. He's probably getting better every day on that. But he believes that the things that he has said about trade and immigration, remember he used to say, you know, the hedge fund guys, they're going to have to pay a little more. Mm-hmm. He's kind of abandoned that, which is probably not a good idea if he wants to appeal more broadly. Mm-hmm. But he has, throughout the course of the campaign, thrown out ideas that are clearly directed toward bringing other people into the Republican Party. So it's not a completely base strategy.
I mean, he's also, the news has come out today that he and Mike Pence are going to participate in Super PAC fundraising. One of the other speakers tonight is Tom Barrack, CEO of Colony Capital, organizing a Super PAC. Donald Trump had denounced those earlier, Ginger. You heard his denunciations many times on the campaign trail.
A lot of that was just maybe for the cameras. We also know that he talked to people before he formally formed his campaign about Super PAC. So it wasn't like he was keeping them at arm's length the entire time. It's a little bit of a myth.
But that
Donald
was such
Trump,
a big thing in the debates. He'd say, all these other guys appear, they're bought and paid for. You
and
know
now,
how it works.
And now we need to
I
say
write
that
the check
that
and
not,
then I ask for the favor.
Not all that was going on behind the scenes, right? So it is important to remember that he was in talks with people. Corey Lewandowski was in talks with people before the campaign formed for a Super PAC. And those ties are there, just as if not as strong as Jeb, who explicitly fundraised for one before. But he was working with these people beforehand.
But he did adopt Democratic-style rhetoric about the corrupting influence of money in politics.
Very explicitly.
And his thing was, I'm so rich,
right.
I don't need it. But he said some very left-wing sort of things about money and politics.
Right. So he came up against reality and said, well, he can't finance a campaign that's going to cost $1 billion or $2 unless he sells off his empire. He's not a liquid man. He looked at Hillary Clinton and her affiliated super PACs completely overpowering him. So he's yielded to reality, which I suppose if you're a Republican is quite good news that he's playing the game rather conventionally. I think he has played the game all along more conventionally than you would think. From his rhetoric. He hasn't needed to spend a whole lot of money so far because all of us here are very happy to trumpet everything he
does. Well, we're at his
does.
Convention it's, right now.
That's right, but to a much greater extent than any candidate before, he commands free airtime.
He's run a very shoestring campaign. He put $50 million or something like that of his own money into it, but everybody says this has been a skeletal kind of campaign structure. Can he continue to do that on toward November? Does he have the is he ready to ramp up and do that in a more conventional way?
At risk of making a Dana move where I say something can't happen and then it maybe can't, I think it's going to be really hard to run a national campaign without an infrastructure. Look at the Melania incident this week.
Perfect.
A campaign that's professional, that's there, that's got people who says, let's run this through some plagiarism software and let's give it another read and let's have someone else listen to it, is going to catch these things. And that's a big flashy thing. But what happens when you miss that story in Columbus about a power company or about some organization or some board or some city council that you could really capitalize, crystallize with voters in a key swing state.
Yeah.
You don't have staff on the ground to tell the candidate in your stump speech you need to mention the Westerville City Council made this ruling that no
whatever
one likes.
It may be.
And you miss out on those opportunities. And that's a minute example, but those are the kind of things that staff give you and those are the kind of things that he needs and to turn voters
Byron,
out.
Byron, do you think he'll do that? Or is he going to think, look, I've had the media around my finger from day one. I'm going to keep them right there. I'm going to start cranking up the outrage over Hillary Clinton. You know, who knows what's yet to come on that front? It can get tough out there. Does he need the ground game?
Yeah, he does, and he's not going to get it. It's too late for some of this stuff. A couple of things to remember about this. Trump believes that his free media exposure basically helped win him the nomination, which is true. We had a Harvard study come out, I think, last week, which showed that he got a lot of very neutral to positive coverage in the media when the race was in the horse race stage, because he was winning.
17, 16, however many there were.
You know, as the horse race became less intense, it became more clear Trump was going to win. The negative coverage of him, coverage focused much more on him, the portion of it that was negative just shot
upward. Some people just didn't take him seriously at first.
Yes, and if you go back in 2012, after the 2012 election, Obama's strategist bragged that they had that they had framed Mitt Romney. They had defined Mitt Romney in May and June before the Republican convention.
Yeah, had a chance.
And that the cake was baked by that time.
Yeah.
And I think Democrats believe that they are working on doing that right now. Millions and millions of dollars have been spent on Democratic ads here in Ohio and other key states. Trump has spent zero. And so the worry I think Republicans should have is that the die has been cast already now in late July.
Before people go flooding out of this convention hall, let's go to our listeners. We've got a call right here from Cleveland, Ohio, where we're sitting right now live on this evening. Anastasia, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. What do you think?
Hi. Well, I'm going to say first off that I am an independent voter, yet I really switched my votes. I voted for Republicans. I voted for Democrats.
Okay.
I think that what needs to be done is we have to look much more closely at Mr. Trump's actions, okay? So he says he's going to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., yet we know the whole thing about his Trump suits and ties and all of his political tchotchkes, all of them being China. His defense is, I couldn't find anything affordable. And I even put out a tweet where I suggested some manufacturers to his campaign because that's a lie, okay? So, secondly, I have deep reservations about him because of his buffoonery, because the president is a representative to other countries, and because we need to have diplomacy. See, with him, it all seems all about winning and losing. There's nothing about diplomacy and cooperation about what he does, you know, and especially the ghostwriter that helped him write, you know, The Art of the Deal came out and said, you know, I'm sorry I've created this monster.
Anastasia, we've got it. Watch what he does, not what he says, and look for diplomacy. NATO up in arms today after he said yesterday that he wouldn't automatically honor those NATO commitments for the U.S. to come in case one of its members was threatened. Let me hold that and go to one more call right here, Brighton, Massachusetts. Maggie, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I absolutely love your program, and I love the balance that you have. It's remarkable. But I did want to make a comment about Trump. I am a Democrat. And I'm speaking for a lot of people in my area. This is what they say. He's saying what people are thinking. So basically, when he speaks, he's an alive human being. And we sense that he's not mouthing an ideology, which is what I would say about the current liberal ideology is it's not a paradigm that is equal to the circumstances of the present world. See, it's a
Does that leave you as a Democrat ready to vote for Donald Trump, Maggie?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't dislike Hillary. I like Hillary. I don't think she's a bad person. I don't listen to the slanders. I love Obama. I think he's a great president. But I think that the discourse that Trump gives us is real discourse. There's some, you know, he may be, you know, extreme in the views, but it's a more realistic discourse to the reality that we face.
Maggie, I really appreciate your call. Dana Milbank, pick that up.
Well, look, I don't think anybody can deny that there's a lot of unhappiness, disaffection out there for obvious reasons because the economy for a long period of time has not produced what it had previously.
We know that, but Donald Trump is the realist. Donald Trump is the alive, dynamic thinker, communicator, honest to the moment. The realist.
Well, right. I mean, he completely comes from with outside of the political system. He, for much of this campaign, has gotten a pass for, as the first caller was saying, all kinds of things that would hamstring a number of regular politicians or other politicians. So he has been judged by a different standard. There's no question that there is this populist anger out there that he's tapping into. Now, he's taking it into darker places as well, and where I think you get into issues of splitting the country by race and gender.
But Maggie sees him as a kind of truth teller that others are not capable of being or just don't exercise. Do you see him as... telling it like it is, or when he says we're going to win and win and win and we're going to bring manufacturing back, we're going to blow this? Or
well, I think he's a guy who says whatever pops into his brain at the moment, and he is
no fool.
He is no fool, and the first caller there talked about buffoonery. One thing you are not going to see tonight is buffoonery. This, if anything, you'll see, you know, the speech of a strong man that, you know, we've previously seen only in other
you
countries.
You sure? I mean, he likes to go off script. That's where, you know, his sort of energy lies. That's what Maggie
never
responds
know
to when
what
he tells
he's going
it
to do.
Like it is.
In these big moments, yeah, he has been able to stick sort of on a script. He's not particularly good with a teleprompter because he's talked
doesn't
about how nobody
so
should use a teleprompter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would be very surprised if he went off script here. And it is a good speech. I think it's a very dangerous speech, but it's a well-put-together speech by the speechwriter.
A dangerous speech. We'll have to come back and ask you why you see it as dangerous. Dan Milbank with The Washington Post. Ryber New York with The Washington Examiner. Ginger Gibson with Reuters. She's been covering Trump from the beginning. We're all here in Cleveland. Listeners, this is it. Donald Trump's big night, and you can join us. What do you think? Does Trump speak to you with what message? And tonight, do you want raw Trump? Do you want scripted Trump? Do you want plans, ideas you can dig into, or just make America great? Again, I was just down in the convention hall, and there are Make America Great hats all over that hall. We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. In Cleveland, last night, Republican National Convention. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point in Cleveland on the last night of the Republican National Convention, the night that Donald Trump will speak. He will say, I am your voice. And he will say that again and again, trying to reach right out from the convention hall to the big audience that will be watching tonight to say, come with me. I'm your voice. I'm the outsider. We can do this together. You know that form. But what's inside the package? Donald Trump, seldom seen. Maybe never. There have been other Americans. Great story in the Times today about this, sort of this the heritage here of, you know, call it Douglas MacArthur, or call it Ross Perot, or call it George Wallace, or call it Henry Ford, or all the way back to William Randolph Hearst. Other outsized characters who have made a run at this. None have had a full party nomination with the kind of situation that Donald Trump is in right now, headed for November. Listeners, you can join us tonight. Why has this man, this kind of candidate, risen up now to the top of the GOP? Has he got you? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Dana Milbank here from The Washington Post. Ryber New York from The Washington Examiner. Ginger Gibson from Reuters. She has followed Donald Trump from the beginning. He's talked a lot about winning. He won big in November. In February, talked in Las Vegas.
You know, we weren't expected a couple of months ago. We weren't expected to win this one. You know that, right? We weren't. Of course, if you listen to the pundits, we weren't expected to win too much. And now we're winning the country. And soon the country is going to start winning.
I remember the Republican debate. Sorry, the tape isn't working right now. Never mind that. Let's go to our caller, Sue in Gorham, Maine. Sue, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
We have a problem with our connection. Anyway, you guys are right here. You guys are right here, and I'm happy to have you. Dangerous, Dana. You say he's got this message, and it's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, look, as Ginger correctly points out, we don't know. I mean, he could completely chuck this and go off script. It could be a head fake. But let's take him at his word for once of what they say it's going to be. Our convention occurs at a moment of crisis. Attacks on our police, terrorism in our cities. It talks about violence in our streets. It goes on and on through this. Ended the life of an innocent girl. The killer was released. Mm-hmm. One more child to sacrifice. 14 million people out of the workforce, poverty, incomes down, on and on, food stamps, third world conditions, international humiliation,
country
brought down
falling
in
apart,
flames.
World falling apart.
I mean, you would be suicidal at the end of this speech if you took it at face value, and I suspect a lot of people will take it at face value. And he paints a picture that we are under siege like never before. And what's the solution? Well, he's the solution, the strong man who will come in and make it all better. There's nothing terribly specific in here. The usual, you know, I'll build a wall, but it basically says everything is falling apart all around, and I'm the only one who can fix it.
You say that's dangerous, though.
Well, it is, because that's what demagogues have used, fascists in other countries who have risen have used that technique over and over again. Now, that doesn't mean Donald Trump is necessarily a fascist, but he is using those techniques of creating a sense of panic and fear, exaggerating a sense of panic and fear, and saying only through my personality and my magnetism can create the solution, can be your protector.
I mean, one, Byron, a person can be drawn into that. Before this convention, we heard a lot about what could happen in Cleveland. And, you know, all the right. talk about, like, biker gangs are going to be fully armed and open carry in the streets of Cleveland. And we're going to have huge protests from the left and counter-protests from the right. It sounded like Chicago 68 and, you know, sort of slaughter in the streets. I'm out walking today and there's, you know, modern dancers
nice
out there. And it's beautiful.
Right.
And it's lovely. And I thought, did even I get caught up in this fever dream? On the other hand, you heard Newt Gingrich's litany last night about everything that's gone on just in the last month. And a half, the terror attacks Europe and beyond.
Yeah. I was about to bring this up. I mean, you might become suicidal if you read the Washington Post and watched other media after Dallas and after Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And these stories about the country is on edge, anxiety, you know, blankets the country, deep divisions, blah, blah, blah. So I think it would be actually irresponsible for a political candidate to not address that kind of stuff. And particularly in this bunch of mass shootings that we have had lately. So it seems to me, and Trump has a way to differentiate himself a lot as the law and order candidate. You know, if you watched Hillary Clinton's speech to the NAACP, I think it was on Monday in Cincinnati.
I didn't get
you
to
know,
see
it was there was a huge section on felons' rights and on mass incarceration and on, you know, making sure felons can work again and on reducing sentences and all this kind of stuff. And there is another flip side to emphasize law and order. And it's a much different country than when Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew were elected in 1968 on a law and order platform. It's a demographically different country.
How does that matter here, Byron?
Well, it's much more democratic right now. Clearly, Democrats have a partly immigration-driven electoral advantage, and they believe that electoral advantage is going to continue with, you know, the white share of the voting population going down about 2% every 4 years.
Yep.
And that's a change that Republicans have to deal with, and they're still in the internal debate stage on that. But just given the amount of disorder in the country, not only with the attacks on police, but Orlando, San Bernardino, fears of Paris and Brussels-style attacks here, I think it would be nuts for a presidential candidate not to address that pretty frankly in a big speech like this.
Does Donald Trump think, Ginger, and you followed his campaign for a long time, do his people think that this is like a last chance to grab onto the demographic that's most drawn to them and you know, grab the trapeze and swing into the White House? If he does it tonight or in the White House, does he see a way to then turn and open his rhetoric and his view to more explicitly to a wider swath of the nation?
You know, we talked earlier about how in 2012 the Democrats were so proud they had framed Mitt Romney by July, and they kind of had won that race by then. It was over. To say that the Donald Trump campaign has a 2-week or a 6-week or a 3-month outlook on how they're going to do their campaign would probably be very gracious.
Generous.
Okay. Give generous. They are not that well organized. They are not that well planned. I think that their first goal was to get through this week. They are clearly, it appears, going to get through it with all of the bumps in the road. Despite that, they're building staff out as quickly as they can. A lot of this is falling on the RNC. That idea that they were going to be ready-made for a candidate to adopt. Some of it is. But you have to remember, when you run a scorched earth campaign, you can't go out and hire the experienced and talented staffers of your opponents. We've seen very little movement of staff over. I think that they're trying what they think will work, and it's kind of like, let's see what sticks to the wall. If to say that they've already decided this is our last moment to grasp these groups, or we can do it in August, or we can do it in October. I will never forget Neil Newhouse, Ron was a pollster, telling me no one's going to pay attention until after Labor Day. We're fine. The poll numbers don't matter, and me scratching my head. I don't think that the Trump campaign's thinking in those terms at this point in a real comprehensive way. They're thinking, and let's give the best speech we can. Let's get going. I look at the Reuters Ipsos tracking poll every day, and we're seeing numbers that fluctuate, but he's not showing an ability to really move up and take charge. And I do think that if we look at the polling
historically... I thought he was coming pretty close to Hillary Clinton in some of the
He got within 7 points. He got within 7 points in our poll this week,
okay,
right?
That's still...
But if you, but he needs to be up 7 points going into Philadelphia, right? And if she takes a bump out of Philadelphia, she could be uncatchable. I mean, it could really pull out ahead and be a problem.
And by the way, 7 points, if you look at the Real Clear Politics average of polls from 2012, that's way more than Mitt Romney was ever behind Barack Obama from the convention on.
So do you see that as surmountable? This is an unusual candidate.
Given some event that I can't forecast, but it's a the position that he's in with college-educated white voters, Republicans should be leading in that group. Mm-hmm. He's not leading in that group. Mm-hmm. That's a major, major problem for him. We know his problems with women. He has a pretty big gender gap. He's a lot of support among men.
Hoping Ivanka tonight will help again on that.
He could do worse than Romney did among Hispanic voters. Romney did 27, which was viewed as a crisis by the Republican Party at that time. The biggest issue, though, is those demographic changes I was talking about. If you look at all of the states that have voted Democratic every single election since 1992, last six elections, add them up, it's 242 electoral votes. They're just 28 away when they start there.
Right there.
So he's got a big problem.
I have a question for all three of you. It's come up on the show. Came up last night. We have callers coming in and saying, wait, you're treating Donald Trump like a normal candidate, like a normal person. You shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we're sitting here, and he is the nominee, and he's accepting tonight of the Republican Party. And he's come up through the primary system that is laid out and is conventional, and you know, it's the same contest that everybody else is in. And it puts all of us maybe in a quandary, but I don't know if it should. Byron, our caller last night said this is a sociopath, and you need, every time you mention his name, you should say so. Dana says this is dangerous. This is a demagogue, you know. On the other hand, he's jumped into this race. He's an American businessman who's been successful on that front. Yes, he's charismatic, and yes, he's got a different style than most politicians, but should that preclude him? As journalists, when we talk about Donald Trump, and let me put this to you because you're with a fairly conservative publication, should we come at it in a straight up traditional way? Here's the nominee. He's the head of the party, and we're just going to treat him like everybody else who's come before him, Eisenhower and Nixon and, you know, Ford and Reagan and all the rest. Or does there need to be a caveat of some kind of different treatment?
No. There does not need to be a caveat. You know, the Huffington Post publishes a little editor's note at the bottom of every Trump story saying, basically, this is a horrible man. And we just wanted to tell you that. That is not necessary. You just report what's going on. Look, I think Trump has rather brutally exposed in the primary races the differences between the Republican political power structure and its voters.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
you can say that was a fairly healthy thing.
Yeah,
and
sort of
so
clean out the stables.
I think what's important with Trump is on the one side you have the showmanship, the craziness, the circus, but on the other hand you have actual policy that's really very important. If you look at the speech he's going to deliver tonight.
Okay. I've been looking for deep policy, and I haven't found a ton of deep policy.
That is a serious speech.
Okay.
And it deserves to be taken seriously.
Yeah. Ginger, you followed him for months and months and months. What's your answer to this question? What is the responsible way for journalists to cover this candidate?
Well, he might not be a normal candidate, but he's going to appear on a normal ballot and in a normal election with the everyday average American population. None of that changes. He doesn't get a different type of election. Mm-hmm. And so I think we are obligated to cover it the same as we would any other election in terms of presenting the facts. Now, I covered Mitt Romney on a day-to-day basis in 2012, and we asked hard questions, and we dug in on things that they didn't want us to look at, and we wrote about, one of my colleagues wrote about his car elevator, right? So I don't think that there's anything that's fair game or not fair game that we should say we can or cannot write. Now, if Donald Trump changes his position on blocking Muslims from entering the country, which he's sort of done, and then the point of a Muslim ban or refugees comes up, we need to remind voters that he did at one point say he would block all Muslims from entering the country, even if now he's changed that to mean country-specific. I think it's responsible for us to still hold him to the views he espoused during the primary. But I don't think we need to treat him any different than any other candidate who, if Hillary Clinton decided that she no longer supports the Wall Street reform she did in the primary because she doesn't need to,
we would point that out
as well.
Dana, you're a columnist, not a reporter. You've got a little more latitude here, but how do you see this? Well, if he is, as you say, dangerous, as you say, a demagogue? Mm-hmm. What should that mean to reporters who are trying to cover this race and cover Donald Trump?
Right, and I may disagree with the others here slightly on this, because I do think something needs to be said, certainly not some phony thing about how awful he is at the end of each column. I tend to write that in the first paragraph of my columns. But here is a man who is in many ways operating outside of our constitutional system when he talks about rewriting the First Amendment, when he talks about going after the judge overseeing the fraud lawsuit against him, when he talks about using the antitrust laws and the Justice Department to go after his enemies, yep. when he talks about torturing, when he talks about ordering the military to attack the innocent relatives of terrorists. These are not things that we do in our democratic system, and that's why I think a lot of people were upset this week with the calls for, lock her up and kill Hillary, put her in jail. I mean, this is not
even
part
that,
of our...
Yeah,
this
that.
Is not part of a civil society. So I think it should have a higher level of scrutiny, but I'd be happy enough if he's just treated like any other candidate. The complaint during the primary was he was treated as a celebrity, and he would say the most outrageous things, and there wouldn't be a whole lot of scrutiny. That changed dramatically once the field was cleared and he really secured the nomination, and now I think he is being held to the same standards that other candidates would be, and I think he is withering somewhat under that.
Can I add
yes,
one more
Ginger,
thing?
Please.
I am surprised by the lack of attention that has been paid to the chance of lock her up on the floor. I mean, when you think about that outside
and
the context,
been again and again and again,
again and again,
it's kind
loud,
of like a gladiatorial.
More times than they have chanted the name Trump, they have chanted the words lock her up.
Yeah.
And I think that if we think about it in the hyperbolic situation of this election,
and we've heard string her up and so on from Trump people,
it's just another thing that gets said in this wacky election. But when you think about it in the terms of if the Canadians were chanting that about their political opponents, or a country in Europe or a country in Mexico, we would have a very different reaction to it. And I think we should walk away from it for a moment and think about it sometimes in those terms.
Byron, you said it may be a good thing for the Republican Party that he's called out this gap between elites and the Republican base. Look at the healthy side of Donald Trump. How do you see it? Where do you see it most potently? Is there a bigger role that he can play here, might play, that Americans may put him in office to, turn over a political system where the elites have forgotten the people?
Well, you can't get bigger than running for the presidency. So I think that there's two things to look at. It's the effect that he had on the Republican Party in the whole primary process, which kind of comes to an end with this coronation here at the convention. But is can he actually go out and appeal to a broader number of voters? The polls right now are telling him he's not doing it. Mm-hmm. He's got a couple of months to try to,
and a big, big, big speech tonight. Byron York with the Washington Examiner. It's great to have you with us. Thanks so much
Thank
for joining
you.
Us tonight here in Cleveland. Ginger Gibson, all of your reporting on the trail, the campaign trail with Donald Trump, we've really appreciated it, and wonderful to have you with us tonight from Reuters. And Dana Milbank, columnist with the Washington Post, well, he did get the nomination tonight. He accepts it. Thank you so much for being with us, Dana.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, we had a little technical trouble here and couldn't get to as many of your calls as I would have liked to, but thank you very much. We know you're listening there all over the country. We're always happy to have you with us. I want to thank Sarah Platt and Catherine Brewer and Karen Schiffman and all of our team who have been with us here in Cleveland for this whole week of coverage of the Republican National Convention, and our great team back in Boston backing us up all the way. It's been a big effort, and we really appreciate it. All of your calls and letters and tweets and Facebook and website comments through the week, we love as well. They keep us informed about how you see the world. Facebook Live, wonderful to have you with us tonight as well. From Cleveland, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.